in my previous visits to this Sunday program, actually I visited the Nashville Temple before that, some years ago, upon invitation from the temple management to make some presentation, but this ongoing group that's presenting Krishna consciousness here, I've taken a theme of covering different chapters of Bhagavad Gita, since Bhagavad Gita is so fundamental and essential for spiritual understanding. I just received a little piece of news from there's a group of devotees that are singularly focused and dedicated to the mission of making Bhagavad Gita available to people all over the world in all different languages and all different cultures. So a very interesting item was sent, where somebody in a far-off distant land, it could be practically any country, but it wasn't an English-speaking country, some other part of the world, not India and not USA and Canada and Australia, some other part of the world, they just had a little power failure. Oh, here we go. They got a blessing from one of their friends. They said, "Today, I hear you're going to such and such town, and I just feel it. You are going to distribute 100 Bhagavad Gitas today." He thought, "No, 100 Bhagavad Gitas today, no, no." And he narrated the story of, he went out with something of a hope, but not really any hope, just serve Krishna and whatever Krishna desires, but maybe 100 Bhagavad Gitas. So they were not having 100 Bhagavad Gita a day by any means, and as the afternoon rolled around, they had even skipped lunch, thinking maybe if I do a little austerity and Krishna will somehow. But that wasn't going to happen. But what did happen was some store owner, an occult bookstore type of place, came running out into the street and said, "What is it that you have?" And he said, "I have Bhagavad Gita as it is." And they said, "I'm an aura reader." Aura, they read auras. "And so I see that whatever it is that you have on your table there, it has such an aura. I want some of these. I want to stock in my occult bookstore different books, but I've been not buying any books because I couldn't find one that had the right aura." So they bought 30 of them. And then this devotee was going on, and they read some of Bhagavad Gita as it is. They were so moved. "I want another 30 books." They were thinking, maybe I'll make my 100 book day. And then someone, she had put them on her shelf, and several persons came to buy Bhagavad Gita as it is, so she thought, "I'll take the last that you have on your table." Even people that don't know what is Bhagavad Gita have great appreciation for Bhagavad Gita, especially when it's presented in a manner where the way that Krishna has described to Arjuna, as Krishna had previously described to the sun god Vivaswan, and Vivaswan taught to Manu, and Manu taught to Ikshvaku, through that parampara system of disciplic succession, when the message is presented in that way, it can affect and change the hearts of even persons that don't understand so much the language or the message, the number of Bhagavad Gitas of Srila Prabhupada's purports distributed in now something like 92 languages in the world. The number since the beginning of the distribution of Bhagavad Gita exceeds the 7 million copies mark. So in this world, that's not so many billions of people. But to seriously receive and read Bhagavad Gita, it has a spiritualizing effect in the world. So all of you wouldn't be here if you had other than some spiritual interest. So this is the best audience for hearing. And I'll assume that you already know, at least to some degree, what that message of Bhagavad Gita is. But as Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, katayantascha mam nityam tushanti cha ramanti cha, those who are devoted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they enjoy again and again hearing Krishna's message. Because each time we hear the message, it purifies and it goes more deeply within the heart. So hopefully that's what we'll experience today. I think it would help if the lights up here would go down. And even those could go down, that would be good. So, last time that I was here, we discussed chapter 10 of Bhagavad Gita. That's the opulences of the Absolute, or Vibhuti Yoga chapter. And in the Vibhuti Yoga chapter, it's a very important chapter, which I'm not going to summarize because we're going to discuss chapter 12, but I want to lead into it because it's a conversation, just like you're having a conversation with someone. Points follow consecutively. You explain something, that leads to another something, leads to another something. There's a natural flow. So in chapter 10 of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is disclosing the essential verses, the Chatur Shloki verses, the four verses which summarize the essence of the entire Bhagavad Gita in four verses. Those four verses are describing how Krishna is the source of everything. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pavartate. From him everything spiritual, everything material comes. Therefore, those who understand this, they engage in my devotional service. And the process of devotional service is previously described in the 9th chapter. So, the conclusion of the personal feature of the Personality of Godhead is established in chapter 10, and Krishna is asked by Arjuna to describe the various ways in which we can always think of you. So he describes the vibhutis, or the manifestations of Krishna's opulences in this world, so that we can think of Krishna, how he's present just by a spark of his splendor in this world, so we can get an idea of his unlimited splendor of the spiritual world. And then comes chapter 11. So this is now going to be a little summary of chapter 11. And one of the voices you'll recognize is Bir Krishna Maharaj's voice. He's narrating some of this. So, 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is the universal form, Virat Rup. Arjuna asks Krishna, can you show me that form of yours, which is the entire cosmic manifestation in one place at one time? Can you give me the divine eyes to see that? So Krishna does. And he displays his universal form, and the various features of the Virat Rupa is so overwhelming to Arjuna that he then requests, can you withdraw this form now? It's too much. I want to see that original form of yours. And Krishna shows not after the universal form, his Vasudev Krishna form, and then he shows his two-armed Krishna form and says that it's very rare for one to see this form and understand this form. Only through devotional service can this be understood. And so it naturally leads to devotional service chapter. Arjuna wants to understand that process of devotional service. So, here we go. Fasten your seatbelts. We're ready to take off.
To protect innocent people from imposters, Arjuna asks Krishna to prove his divinity by exhibiting his universal form, a form that anyone who claims to be God should be prepared to show.
Our acharyas have explained that, and particularly Srila Prabhupada has explained that, Arjuna is a devotee. In chapter 10, he's already expressed his understanding, explicit understanding that Krishna is God. Now he's asking to see his universal form. He understands he's God, so the purpose for his asking Krishna to show this form is not so he can be convinced, but as this little text here indicates, so that others in the future who may claim that they are God, then one may ask, can you kindly show me your universal form?
Krishna gives Arjuna divine vision by which to see the brilliant, glaring, unlimited universal form, which reveals in one place everything that ever was, or now is, or will be.
And that's overwhelming. Imagine, one can only imagine. Imagine if you were a switchboard operator in the old style of switchboard, and every single telephone message at one time was coming into your switchboard anywhere around the world. And that's just telephone conversations. If every thought, every physical manifestation throughout all of time and all of space was simultaneously present before you at once, that's what Arjuna saw and experienced. Everything that ever was, now is, or will be, past, present, and future, all at once in one place at one time.
At that time, Arjuna could see in the universal form of the Lord the unlimited expansions of the universe situated in one place, although divided into many, many thousands. Arjuna offers obeisances with folded hands and glorifies the Lord. Arjuna requests Krishna to withdraw his fearful form and show his original form. The Lord then exhibits his four-armed form and at last his original two-armed form. Upon seeing the Lord's beautiful human-like form, Arjuna becomes pacified. Only one engaged in pure devotional service can see such a form.
So, 2 points. One is to love, one requires person. And the universal form is the manifestation of the cosmic creation, which is not so lovable. It's very fearful. So Arjuna is moved by love and not by fear. He wants to see this personal form. And the chapter concludes, second point, is this. Only one engaged in pure devotional service can see such a form. And so naturally, this leads to the question, pure devotional service. Can you describe it? Now that's been discussed in chapter 9, the most confidential knowledge. What is the platform of pure devotional service? So now Arjuna is going to ask Krishna for some clarification. For a third time, as he is asked in chapter 3 and chapter 5, indirectly, he's now going to directly ask, which feature of the Supreme do you recommend the most for one to worship, the personal or the impersonal?
Chapter 12, Devotional Service.
So there's three sections in this chapter. The which is more perfect section, discussing the personal and impersonal features of the Supreme. A classic question that comes up, at least in, volume down, in Vedic teaching, the Western philosophers and religionists have had some idea of it's all one, or God is one, or everything is God, that idea. But it's very striking in Vedic teaching. So here we find in Bhagavad Gita, perhaps ABC of spiritual knowledge, a very direct discussion where Krishna is being asked to identify to Arjuna which is more perfect, comparing impersonal and personal worship.
Which are considered to be more perfect? Those who are always properly engaged in your devotional service, or those who worship the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested?
Now the question is very clear, yes? Which are considered to be more perfect, those who worship the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested, the personal feature?
Which are considered to be more perfect? Those who are always properly engaged in your devotional service, or those who worship the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested?
So there they are, the two pictures and the two options. And very direct question, and Krishna is not going to sidestep the question and give something ambiguous. He gives a very clear, explicit answer.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, those who fix their minds on my personal form and are always engaged in worshipping me with great and transcendental faith are considered by me to be most perfect.
And the destination of such worshippers is also very clear. What we practice in this life, on this plane of our existence, leads us naturally to the spiritual plane where one engages in very personal direct service to Krishna eternally. So, of the two, Krishna is indicating those who worship him with great and transcendental faith are considered by him to be most perfect. And then?
But those who fully worship the unmanifested, that which lies beyond the perception of the senses, the all-pervading, inconceivable, unchanging, fixed, and immovable, the impersonal conception of the absolute truth, by controlling the various senses and being equally disposed to everyone, such persons, engaged in the welfare of all, at last achieve relief.
So, to fix one's mind on that which has no qualities, that which has no form, that which has no name, that which is unmanifest, that which you cannot experience with the senses, very difficult. So, Krishna recommends that which is more direct. And for the embodied soul, that's most of us. There may be some other spirits moving around, but for most of us, we're embodied souls. It's very difficult and not natural. Then he goes on.
Those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested, impersonal feature of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult. Those who are embodied.
Again, most of us are embodied. So we're accustomed to thinking of things in terms of form. And it's not just because we're accustomed to, it's also because on the spiritual plane, there's form. That is to say, it's natural. Even on the spiritual plane, spiritual form is natural because there is spiritual form. In addition, there is the formless Brahman, but there's also spiritual form. And so, it's very troublesome to not only controlling the senses and mind by mechanical means is troublesome and difficult, but fixing the mind upon the impersonal is very difficult.
But those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me, and being devoted to me without deviation, engaged in devotional service and always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds upon me, O Son of Krishna, for them I am a swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death.
And this is the most important and outstanding feature of the process of bhakti, or devotional service, is the Krishna factor. That is, it's not just based upon our efforts, but Krishna recognizing our sincere efforts of devotion, he delivers the soul to the spiritual position, out of the material condition, the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. Whereas in the mechanical processes of meditation, one's own effort is the primary positive factor. And there's procedures and disciplines and recommended methods, but it's so much is dependent upon one's own effort. Whereas devotional process also has rules and regulations and standards. But the devotee is feeling very dependent upon the mercy of Krishna. This spirit of devotion is the crowning factor of devotional service, which makes it superior for the performer. So Krishna has answered Arjuna's question. Examples from the scripture include, in the case of Ajamila, he was a brahmana. He was properly engaged in his duties as a brahmana. He was from a very, very good family, and he was a young married man and had proper dealings with his spiritual master. But one eventful day, he encountered a prostitute and a shudra doing their thing together, and his mind became too much disturbed. So much disturbed that he couldn't get that scene, that experience off of his mind. And though he went back to his brahminical duties and he did his pujas and chanted his slokas and tried to fix his mind again, his mind wouldn't go back. And so being distracted, he followed the dictate of the mind and he went to visit the prostitute, and in course of time he became a completely fallen man. He gave up all of his rabbinical duties, gave up his family, gave up his wife, and took cohabitation with a prostitute, and all of his qualities went down, finished, for his whole life. So he was a subject for the Yamadutas, but when the Yamadutas came and he saw them, and he called the name of his youngest son, who he fortunately named Narayana, when he called very earnestly the name of Narayana with great desperation, the agents of Narayana came, the Vishnudutas came, and stopped the Yamadutas from taking the soul with their subtle ropes, the subtle body of Ajamila that was being tied up to take to Yamaraj. So Krishna is the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. For those who even inadvertently, indirectly, or abhas bhakti, they engage in some nice service, Krishna protects. What to speak of shuddha bhakti. So that's the first section. Now Krishna has, in this section, established the superior or topmost position of fixing one's mind upon his personal form. And then he goes into the next section where he describes in stages what's the topmost position of spiritual attainment. And of course, somebody might hear that description of the topmost position of spiritual attainment and think, that's too much. That's beyond my capacity. So Krishna recognizes some may think like that, so he provides, if you can't do that, do this. If you can't do this, you do the next thing. If you can't do the next thing, you do the next thing. So he gives a sequence of things that can bring one to the stage of perfection. But first, he outlines what that stage of perfection is. So let us hear what Krishna describes.
Fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus, you will live in me always, without a doubt.
So the formula is very simple. Two things. Mind fixed upon Krishna and intelligence always engaged in his service. The intelligence directs the mind and senses. So the intelligence is considering in all ways how to serve the interest of the Supreme. And in so doing, the mind is fixed upon the Supreme. Then you live in Krishna. You live in Krishna, in his spiritual abode, with him. In Goloka Vrindavan, always, without a doubt. But someone may say, oh, to always think of Krishna all the time, I'm not capable of doing that, at least at present. So Krishna provides a means to help to come to that stage.
My dear Arjuna, O winner of wealth, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regulative principles of Bhakti Yoga.
So this is showing Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto. Here's a nice picture of Prabhupada giving his discourse on the message of Krishna consciousness. Whoops. This was presented for children at a Gita camp. That's why you're seeing so many pictures of children. And the children would learn the entire chapter of Bhagavad Gita just through the agency of these pictures, along with singing and other devotional practices. Okay. So, follow the regular principles of Bhakti Yoga and you will develop a desire to come to Krishna. But someone could say, I can't follow all the regulations of Bhakti Yoga. For me, that's too difficult. And so Krishna is very merciful. He provides what else one can do.
Develop a desire to attain me.
There we go. Because by following the regulations and the principles of devotional service, this is what comes, the desire to attain Krishna awakens. It's dormant and natural within the heart, and it comes out.
If you cannot practice the regulations of Bhakti Yoga, then just try to work for me. Because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage.
Again, Krishna is very merciful. Here he's describing the principle of karma yoga. Karma nyevaikaraste ma paleshu kadachana, from the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. It's a review point where if you can't follow all the regulations of bhakti yoga, then try to work for Krishna. Just like in our temples, here at this temple or any temple, one may not be able to be so fixed and regulated in all the practices of devotion, but someone who simply comes and renders, as we see here, some simple service, some sweeping, some cleaning, some serving out of prasadam, some simple little service. This is very good. The benefit is, through karma yoga, giving up some of the fruits of one's work unto the Supreme, then gradually one can awaken the sense of devotion to the Supreme and be prepared to follow the regulations of bhakti yoga, and through the regulations of bhakti yoga, come to the stage of desiring to be with Krishna. But supposing someone says, well, working for Krishna, I don't know. That's the sacrifice for me that I'm not so ready to make. Is there something else I can do to help me qualify for that?
If, however, you are unable to work in this consciousness of me, then try to act, giving up all results of your work, and try to be self-situated.
So this is describing two principles. Principle of just in general charity. So someone might give in charity to the poor, or give in charity to a brahmana, some dakshin or some gift or some little seva, and try to be self-situated. Self-situated is being detached from work and being in the mode of goodness, in that quality of mode of goodness, detached mode of goodness. Contemplate that which is eternal as opposed to that which is temporary, and driving the maddened world of today into mad pursuit of fruitive work. Try to be self-situated. Be situated in an eternal principle of self. Supposing someone finds difficulty with that, then?
If you cannot take to this practice, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge.
So, at least try to understand theoretically this distinction of matter and spirit, just as the place where Krishna begins the discussion in Bhagavad Gita. The Sankhya section of this is matter, this is spirit, and we belong over here on this side, on the spirit side. Cultivation of knowledge. Then he goes back up the ladder.
Better than knowledge, however, is meditation.
And this means specifically meditation on that which is eternal, or the soul, or the supreme. Something that is of enduring value.
And better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action, for by such renunciation one can attain peace of mind.
So, this is a nice example. Some of you may know of King Rantidev. He's described in Canto 9 of Srimad Bhagavatam. He was a very pure soul. Not only he was a king, but he himself was fixed in devotion to the Supreme, so much so that he didn't see on the material platform. But he saw that all living beings are part and parcel of the Supreme. He had that capacity, not just theoretically, but he saw like that. And so he was very charitably disposed as the king. People would provide taxes, and he would distribute the taxes very liberally as the citizens required. That's another characteristic of King Rantidev. And another was that he was very austere. One time he had engaged in a fast, an entire fast for 48 days. I mean, somebody would try to do that today and they'd be dead. But King Rantidev had this capacity. Nothing, no food, no drink for 48 days. And he's the king. What does a king need to undergo austerity? He's got riches and abundance. But he wanted to control his senses and purify himself and fix his mind upon the Supreme. So at the conclusion of that extended fast, a royal meal was prepared with all opulent foods, with ghee and very nice presentation from the royal kitchen was brought before King Ranti Dev. And just as he was about to break the fast, a brahmana entered into the royal assembly. So Ranti Dev got up and provided an honorable seat for the brahmana and sat him down and provided the whole thing that he was offered to the brahmana. And the brahmana took what he desired, was very pleased with the king, and he left. So then all the servants of King Ranti Dev took the remnants of the prasad of the brahmana and placed it before the king so he could take maha prasad. And just as he was about to begin taking the prasad, one mendicant came and requested, "May I have some charity?" And so he took half of what he had and provided that for the mendicant. Then again he sat down to take the half that was left of what was left from the brahmana. And you can see from the picture, one man entered with some dogs. He said, "My dogs are very hungry. May I have something for them?" So the king provided the half that was left from the mendicant after what was left from the brahmana to the man and his dogs. But what was left was a tumbler of water, because he hadn't taken water or food for 48 days, so he was going to take some water. And just as he was prepared to take the water, one thirsty man came to his door and requested, "May I have some thirst? I've been traveling and I have no water." So Ranti Dev provided all of the water that was in his tumbler, and so he had nothing left. But as you see, these personalities who came showed that they were actually demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva and others who had come in these forms just to test the quality of Ranti Dev. And they praised Ranti Dev for his self-sacrificing nature. And Ranti Dev offered very, very beautiful prayers to the personality of Godhead, describing, just as it's said here at the end of this section of chapter 12, Bhagavad Gita, that when one has this quality of renunciation, so better than renunciation is renunciation, better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of work, for by such renunciation, one can attain peace of mind. Even in trying circumstances, I can imagine. We all know what trying circumstances are. I know what trying circumstances are. I'm sure everybody else does. How do we remain peaceful or dhira when there's cause of becoming disturbed? When one's mind becomes fixed upon the Supreme. And that is not going to be possible if we're attached to the temporary. So one has to practice renunciation or detachment from the temporary in order to become peaceful. Begin without being peaceful, how can one meditate upon the Supreme and be happy? So this is one of the lessons of this section. So now we're going to go through a little review. This is like a little ladder review, very nicely described here.
In the topmost stage of devotional service, one's consciousness is totally fixed on Krishna. A step lower is the practice of regulative devotional service. Lower than that is karma yoga, renouncing the fruits of action. Indirect processes for attaining the Supreme include meditation and cultivating knowledge.
So on the this section here describes the benefit. Just by study of scripture and books of wisdom and the process of meditation, specifically meditation on sat, not meditating on how to make money, because materialists, they also meditate on where should I invest my money? There's a problem in this place. Where do I put my money now? Meditation upon sat. It leads to purification, peace, and gradual elevation. Then, above that is this work for Krishna, or renouncing fruits of action. This helps prepare one. It's nice. But it's what's especially nice about charity in the quality of goodness is it helps promote one to the stage of wanting to follow regular principles in devotional service, where one tries to serve Krishna directly. And through those regulations of devotional practices, one develops a desire to attain and live with Krishna, to be with Krishna in his eternal spiritual abode. So Krishna is indicating this is best of all the forms of worship. This is the best through devotional service, meditating upon and engaging one's intelligence in the service of Krishna. So we're nearly finished. In this final section, this is very nice. What Krishna is going to do is he's going to describe how he becomes attracted by the qualities of those who have this devotion. So say it again in a different way. Over on the upper right side, that's what we can do. And if we do what Krishna shares with us, he likes. The bottom part is what Krishna feels. This is what we feel and do, and this is what Krishna feels. He feels great happiness, great pleasure, great satisfaction from those who approach him in genuine, sincere devotion. And he further decorates them with nice qualities. So that's the conclusion of the chapter. Very nice section of 12th chapter. A principle is that it's qualities of devotee that make them very dear to Krishna, just like this picture of Sudama. It's not the wealth of Sudama. He was very poor. Nor was it the erudition of Sudama, although he was certainly very learned. But Sudama and Krishna went to school together in the school of Sandipani Muni. It wasn't anything other than his quality of very sincere devotion. So if you can see carefully in the picture, Sudama's tear is coming from Sudama's eye, and from Krishna's eye, a tear is coming from Krishna's eye, just they are gazing into one another's eyes and appreciating the flow of love between them. It's the quality of the devotee that pleases Krishna the most. So this is a theme of this section. Without good qualifications, one cannot be a pure devotee. And one who is not a devotee has no transcendentally good qualification. So, become a devotee. Become situated in devotion to Krishna.
One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities.
This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passing through the Jharkhand forest. Most persons who are of a saintly character, they try to inspire people in general to come to the position of devotion. In the case of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, not just people, but even the forest animals, the tigers and the deer and the monkeys and the elephants and the snakes and the birds and all varieties of life were being enthused and inspired in devotion. Because there was no envy from the heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but rather he was a kind friend to all living beings. Same with Narada Muni. This is a picture of Narada and his friend Parvat Muni, who came to visit one of Narada Muni's disciples, Magari. Here's Nagari's little cottage. Before he was Magari the devotee, he was Magari the hunter. But through Narada's association, Magari the hunter became very pure and soft and non-violent, or kind to all living entities, even ants. He was so enthusiastic to see Narada coming down the path, but he wouldn't even step on an ant to give the ant any difficulty, even to see his spiritual master, whereas before, Magari was half-killing animals and enjoying seeing them flapping in pain. So, through saintly association, one can become like this, non-envious and a friend to all living entities. This is a king, Prataparudra, who took a golden-handled broom, took off his royal attire and took simple Vaishnav dress at the time of Jagannath's Rath Yatra and swept the street before Lord Jagannath. So although he was powerful and rich and of high prestige, he didn't think of himself in that way. Rather, he thought of himself as the humble servant of Lord Jagannath, free from false ego. And in this way, King Prataparudra got the favor of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So these are qualities of a devotee that are very pleasing to Krishna.
Equal in both happiness and distress. He is tolerant, always satisfied.
This is Maharaj Parikshit, who is being faced by the poisonous serpent, the Tataksha bird that was, by the curse of the young Brahmin boy, was to destroy him. And when the serpent came before him, ready to bite him, and immediately, with the intensity of the poison, his body burst into flames, he remained equipoised. So that's pretty extreme circumstance, and things that cause us difficulty, we should become also fixed in both happiness and distress, tolerant, always satisfied.
And engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me.
So again, you remember what Krishna described, the topmost stage of devotion is with mind and intelligence fixed on him. So by practice, by self-control, by constant engagement in devotional service with determination, this stage can be reached. And when that's reached, Krishna is very pleased. Next, Krishna is going to describe another series of qualities of a devotee that please him very much. Here we're going to focus on Prahlad and how he was put into difficulty by Hiranyakashipu, his wicked father. Prahlad was put into difficulty, but he didn't put others into difficulty.
And who is not disturbed by anyone.
Although cause for disturbance may be there, this certainly shows cause for disturbance, but remaining dhira or undisturbed by anyone in any circumstance.
Happiness and distress, fear and anxiety.
So all the while, the external presentation of difficulties was being brought forward by Hiranyakashipu. All the while, Lord Nrisimhadeva, being the protector of Prahlad, was there, and then he showed his form. But even when not showing his form, Lord Nrisimhadeva held Prahlad to be very, very dear. Next, we're going to focus on another section of verses with Hanuman as the example.
devotees was not dependent on the ordinary course of activities.
Certainly Hanuman was not dependent on the ordinary course, and we're not Hanuman. But we can also not depend upon circumstance to provide the opportunity for devotional service. But if we can depend upon Krishna and not the ordinary course of activities, but try to always in all circumstances stay fixed in devotion and service to Krishna,
who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result.
These are devotional characteristics or qualities. Free from all pains and not striving for some result, but we're striving for something. What are we striving for? Striving to please Krishna somehow. Not for ourselves, but for Krishna's satisfaction or Ram's satisfaction for Hanuman.
He's very dear to me.
And Ram accepted that devotion of Hanuman with great happiness, and the happiness of Ram was Hanuman's happiness. And now we're focusing on Dhruva. He was given a discipline of devotional service by Narada, and very carefully he followed that path of devotional service,
and who completely engaged themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal.
Reaching Vishnu was the goal of Dhruva, and with faith in the words of Narada, he very, very, very carefully, meticulously followed those instructions. Lord Vishnu was his goal, and sure enough,
our very, very dear to me.
So, that's the end of the chapter. So the summary, once again, is there are stages of devotion that come as a result of personal worship. Krishna recommends personal worship above impersonal worship. And those who engage in personal worship, there's stages that lead to mind completely absorbed in me, intelligence fixed in me. In that condition, one is with Krishna and in Krishna's association always. And if one can't do that, then there are progressive steps. We should try to understand what those principles of those steps are and apply them in our life. And as we apply them, then Krishna decorates us with nice qualities. And when Krishna sees his devotee coming before him with such sincere devotion, trying to please him, Krishna then finds that quality of devotion very, very pleasing. And then again, he becomes the swift deliverer. He picks one up out of this ocean of material existence and lifts one to the transcendental realm. That's how the process of devotional service works very effectively. So there's chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita. And I think it's about 2 weeks from now, a group of youth in the Chicago area, they'll be going through the next chapter of Bhagavad Gita, getting fixed in the teaching of Bhagavad Gita as it is. Makes you want to become a young person again. Go to school. Go to Bhagavad Gita school. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Yes.
Maharaj, you very nicely described the personal and the impersonal worship, and like many a times, like people are more engaged in the worship of the demigods, where does that worship fit in? They say
that's discussed in chapter 7 and chapter 9. Where it fits in is your question. The indication that Krishna gives in chapter 7 and in chapter 9, well, there's a very nice section in chapter 9 where he indicates those ekatvena pratakvena bahuda vishvatomukam. Sometimes people worship the Supreme as many, which is in a very liberal mood, a very liberal expression. In that particular place, Krishna accepts they're actually worshiping me, because it's a liberal mood. But in other places, in chapters 9 and 7, Krishna says they're misplacing that worship, because it actually is intended for him. And what the demigods are doing is they're administrating the affairs of creation. Krishna makes the Supreme Personality of Godhead, brings forth the creation, and the demigods are superintendents of the departments of maintenance of the creation. And so approaching this demigod for this part of the maintenance of creation, or that, or another, is what the demigod worship is, or worship of the devatas. But the worship of the devatas doesn't bring the position of connecting with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, moksha, or attaining the stage beyond the material conditions of birth and death. Therefore, Krishna is the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. Rather, or conversely, the desire to continue to pursue happiness through temporary things is the result, although one may get those temporary things. One's bondage. Yanti deva vrata devan. One goes to the planets of the devas for one who is the worshipper of the devas. Pitrin yanti pitrirata vrataha. Those who worship the forefathers, they go to the planets of the forefathers. Those who worship the Buddhas, they go to the planets of the Buddhas, the place of the Buddhas. And those who worship Krishna go to Krishna. So, it's not that the worship is the same. Worship, you can worship anyone, and worshiping anyone, the result is the same. That's not the indication of Bhagavad Gita. According to the type of worship, one goes to that destination according to the type of worship. And the recommendation that Krishna is giving is worship the Supreme alone. Sarva dharmam parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. So the devotion is very focused and singular. With that worship of the Supreme, as with Ranti Dev, there's the recognition of all living beings, being favorably disposed to all living beings, certainly respecting the demigods, and favoring very kindly all living beings of all descriptions. But devotional service is very singular and focused, because all those living beings are part and parcel of the Supreme. Yes?
Should one picture of love in context of the animals? What about vegetarian versus non-vegetarian?
What's your opinion?
I'm a vegetarian.
Okay. And so, you want to know if I'm a vegetarian?
What's your opinion? Should we all be vegetarians or what?
Well, yes. Well, let me say, not exactly. What we should be is devotees of the Lord. Because a devotee of the Lord is not just a vegetarian. An elephant's a vegetarian. A gorilla's a vegetarian. So, they're herbivores and carnivores in the animal kingdom. We should not just be herbivores. We should be devotees. And by being a devotee, then not only we only take as our food from certain categories of choices, but we offer, we purchase, cook, prepare, and offer to the Supreme Lord only those things that are in the quality of goodness. And then accept as our food the prasad of the Supreme Lord. That's what we should do. So we shouldn't be this-itarian or that-itarian. We should be devotees. And that's stated directly in Bhagavad Gita also. Whatever you eat should be first made as an offering unto me. Yad kuroshi, yad asnasi, yad jahosi, yad dasi, yad tapasyasi kanteya. Tat kurasha madarpanam. And if we do like that, then our spirit of devotion will awaken. And if our spirit of devotion awakens, we can attain the platform of pure love for Krishna. But by being vegetarian, that's good. We can attain the quality of goodness and take the responsibility for the life of the plant or the whatever it is that may have sacrificed its life for my sake, and then we're bound to that karma of taking that life of that plant. Because people that are not vegetarian, they give that argument, yes? You've heard? We're taking animals and you're taking plants, what's the difference? We're killing animals, you're killing plants. Is that what you're referring to? You've heard that argument? Okay. So if you don't, okay. Yes. You've heard that. And how do you answer that question? Would you like a nice answer to that question? Okay. One answer is, you're right. And therefore, we're not advocating that you're vegetarian. We're advocating that you become a devotee of Krishna. Because when you're a devotee of Krishna, suppose you take a tree, an apple from the apple tree, or some milk from the cow, or some grain from the field. That apple tree, that cow, that living entity that produced the grain is getting spiritual benefit because you're offering the fruit of their life's production unto Krishna. And for yourself, because you've offered that which Krishna has asked for and you've offered it in love and devotion, there's no karmic bondage for you for taking that life. Now you take the apple off the tree, you're not taking the life of the tree, but potentially there's seeds in the apple and that could produce another life, and so, or you take the potato from the ground and you're taking that life, or the carrot from the ground. So there is responsibility for vegetarians also. It's not as severe as the karmic reaction for taking the life of an animal, but it's karmic reaction. And so become free from karmic reaction by a life in devotion. Not only in our eating and everything that we do, just our breathing and our walking and our drinking water, which we can't live without. We're taking the life of other living beings for our survival. And there's karma for that. So what's the solution to that bondage of karma for just existing? Life of devotion that is offered to Krishna and is done in a proper manner, not just whimsically, but done in a proper manner. And that karma is neutralized. It's karma-free living. So don't just be vegetarian. Offer everything that you take first to Krishna. Yeah? Can they offer something to Krishna that's non-vegetarian? They can try. But we know what Krishna is going to say. Krishna is not obliged to accept something like that. If supposing somebody offered you something like that, what would the answer be? No. And that's Krishna's answer also. Yes. Yeah. No, nicely, but proper, yeah. But then give him or her or them something higher. The higher is take the foods that are in the quality of goodness and offer foods in the quality of goodness. And if they want to know what are the foods in the quality of goodness, there's indication if they want to know. Say it again. Well, there's a rough indication in the Bhagavad Gita. There's foods, there's different items. Knowledge in the modes of nature, happiness in the modes of nature, work in the modes of nature, foods in the mode of nature. So in that section under foods of the mode of nature, it's in categories identified. And then in other sattvic literatures, Vedic literatures, it's more detailed, described. If they want it really in detail, it's Hari Bhakti Vilas. In great detail is described what's offerable. And what's, if it's not specifically mentioned, it's not offerable. Yes.
Would you say that an apple, which is normally in the mode, this mode,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
When it's grown, say it's in the wintertime here, but it's grown down in Peru or somewhere where the climate's the opposite, you know, kind of gas on the cheddar liners used to bring it up here, does that still remain the mode of goodness?
It's certainly best to take that which is naturally grown, locally and naturally grown. Not only is, you know, it's sent in a plane from some other place, but it's picked before it's processed. It's picked before it's ripe and gassed and so many things. So it's, the quality of goodness is diminished, but it's a food in the category that's offerable to Krishna. So, you know, if you want to go in the direction of being a purist, go into self-sufficient farming. Yeah, sure. That is the challenge. To find something that's pure in our present age. It's a challenge. Absolutely. But you heard the response. You know, we got to be practical. Yeah, sure.
It appears that there one could say there's a contradiction on one level, because
contradiction between what and what?
The qualities that Krishna describes to Arjuna, the one who's never put in puts one another one in difficult. And we showed the picture of Pallad Maharaj being harassed by his father, and how he just meditated on Krishna. And one is equal to everyone. But then we know that the setting of this is that Krishna and Arjuna are standing on a battlefield. And Krishna is now, Arjuna has already refused to fight. He didn't want to fight. He saw he had these qualities of compassion towards these other opposing armies. And now, Krishna is describing these qualities, but then in the end, he's saying, you know, you should engage in this battle. How do we reconcile that?
Of course, he knows the answer. He's just wanting me to explain the answer. I know that you know the answer. Oh, okay. How convenient. When the answer is reconciled by the absolute nature of Krishna. The absolute nature of Krishna is when Krishna kills a demon or arranges for Arjuna to kill the demoniac soldiers of the Kauravas. Krishna's such act is an act of kindness. Krishna's act liberates those living entities from all of their sinful reactions and delivers them to the spiritual plane. Krishna's act of kindness to his devotee, an apparent act of vinashaya shaduskritam, is of the same absolute nature because of Krishna's absolute nature. He's delivering them, although it looks like he's punishing them. Now that's not our position. If we're standing before someone who has caused us severe harm, we may be just become angry and do some act of anger. That's not the same as what's happening in the Kurukshetra battle. When one acts according to religious principle, there's no binding feature upon the performer, and there's a liberating feature upon the recipient, if one is fixed in principles of Dharma. And ultimately, the principle of Dharma, I indicated already from the 18th chapter, Mam Ekam Sharanam. So the indication of what Krishna wanted was the deliverance of those duskritis to the platform of liberated souls. That's Krishna's absolute nature. Yes.
Maharaj, first of all, I would like to thank you for such a nice demonstration of this chapter 11. It was really, I don't think...
12.
Chapter 12. And I don't think I would have seen this without joining ISKCON, like such a nice interpretation of this. And also, Maharaj, one question, like, in this, what in your opinion is the, like, obstacle and getting started in the pure, like in the devotional service, obstacle, and what is the obstacle, like in attaining the pure devotional service?
Like, obstacle in getting started and obstacle in achieving the goal,
yeah.
Purity. Obstacle in getting started is minimally, it's our attachment to the temporary. Asat. That's the conclusion of Vyasadeva in the Bhagavatam. In this age of Kali, too much people are attached to Asat. And because of that attachment to Asat, even if they have some good opportunity for sadhu sangha, they don't take it. Or they take it in a material way. They look to the sadhu for some advancement of their attachment to asat. They don't take it in the proper way because too much attached. So the obstacle is removed by some special kindness, causeless mercy of sadhus who bring that message in a pure manner, and somehow it enters the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the chanting of the holy name and the taking of Krishna Prasadam, the purifying effects of those things can overcome that over attachment to asat. And for achieving perfection, according to Rupa Goswami, the principal obstacle, or the thing that we must do, say it the other way, is to become very desirous of that, reaching that goal. What's the adhikar, the qualification necessary for achieving pure devotional service? And it's the desire to attain it. When that desire to attain it becomes even theoretically awakened, Krishna sends the resources. And when those resources are sent, if the desire to attain it is there, one takes proper advantage of those resources. Otherwise, one doesn't make substantial progress. One, in fact, remains too much attached to the asat. nasate vidite bhavo na bhavo vidite sataha. Such a simple instruction. 20 os tattvadarshibi. The tattvadarshis have concluded. Once you become attached to sat, and through the association of those who are attached to sat, one can become attached to sat. And too much, there's this idea, okay, I'll go to the spiritual side and take all my attachments with me. You know, you leave your, before you enter the temple, you leave your shoes. You don't bring your shoes into the temple. You don't bring impurity into the presence of God. Leave outside. One has to be prepared to leave those attachments of the temporary to the side, in pursuit of attachment to the Supreme.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anything else? I've got one written one here.
Here, one.
Uh-huh.
When you talk about the hunter, you took the association of Narada.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a certain amount of cost associated with all of us. Just like the hunter, we have some bad qualities that we have given up, and we have taken shelter of the Lord. And Krishna will forgive all our financial and karmic actions that we have done in the past, we still have an effect.
Your question is there continuing effect for our bad deeds in the past? There's two answers. The one answer is yes, as long as we don't continue them again in the future. And we're forgiven for our past mistakes, provided we don't continue them in the future. And the other is very nice verse in the Chaturstoki verses of Bhagavad Gita in the 10th chapter, where Krishna says explicitly, the residual tendency from our past misdeeds, he personally takes responsibility for that. He personally removes that residual tendency by the shining lamp of knowledge, Jnana Dipena Bhasvata. He takes charge of that. Don't worry. That's Krishna's reassurance. I've got one right here. Written question. That's just saving it for the silent moment at the end here. Someone has written, please explain the meaning of the shloka. I can't read the handwriting.
Other pictures would be the
same. Other pictures would be the
same. Udasino gatayata, gatavyata. Would you like to explain the meaning? Oh, yes, you can. What's your sense of the meaning? Well, you know the Sanskrit. You must have some idea. I want to engage in a dialogue. Okay, let's ask your wife.
She used to chant in Kali.
This is one of your favorite verses. So, a little audience participation I'm inviting.
What is the verse?
Huh?
What is the verse?
She's going to tell us. Should we find the Bhagavad Gita? while we're waiting. Anyone else? I want to hear Mataji explain.
Can we perform devotional service in more of goodness, passion, and ignorance?
Yes. That's discussed in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, in the discussion between Devahuti and Lord Kapila Dev. Devahuti asks, devotional service is pure, but is it possible that one who is in the modes of nature can engage in devotional service if devotional service is pure? And the answer is yes, because although devotional service is pure, one's consciousness may not be pure. So, he then describes devotional service in passion, where one's consciousness is in passion, devotional service in ignorance, devotional service in goodness, and pure devotional service. Did you find the verse, Mataji? Okay. Go ahead. 12:16. I want you to not only read it, I want you to explain it. Oh. You don't even want to try. Okay. My devotee, who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result, is very dear to me. Anapeksha. Anapeksha means neutral. Shuchi means pure. Daksha means expert. Udashina, free from care. Gatavyati, free from all distress. Sarva Arambha, free from all cares and all of their endeavors. Prityagi, their renouncer. So, the essence of this is that they're neutral towards temporary, and they're attached to the Supreme. Fundamental principle that's discussed in many places in many different ways in Bhagavad Gita. Again, it's the same principle, attached to Sat. So if one is attached to Sat, then what's the interest in Asat? Supposing, just like the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, someone praises you. If you're not attached to Sat, you think, oh, this is very nice. I finally found an intelligent person. They can understand how good I am. And then someone insults you. Ooh, that hurt. Why did they speak like that? That was mean, nasty. Because they're attached to Asat. But one who is attached to Sat, neither praise nor blame, honor or dishonor. Or the senses. Something seems, you know, it's nice air conditioning because it's summer, but if we were coming in here in the winter, we'd like it to be warm, not nice air conditioning. So the air conditioner gets shut off and the heater gets turned on. So, but one who is neutral towards sense pleasure, happiness, or distress, recognizing the real value of things is sat. So they're tolerant of tatikshava, Krishna indicates in the second chapter. They tolerate the temporary things because their attention is fixed upon those things that are eternal. So not dependent upon the ordinary course of activities means one who is dependent upon transcendence. Because Because we're very tiny, we're dependent upon something. Let us be dependent upon Krishna. Then supposing things are going very nicely, or there's reverses. Things were going very nicely, and all of a sudden it took a U-turn, and now it's going bad. One remains neutral. It was fixed in the Supreme. There's some this difficulty that's coming my way, there's some plan of the Lord, like the Pandavas and Kunti. She was praying to Krishna for difficulty. Who prays to God for difficulty? Kunti. Because she knows when there's difficulty, Krishna comes. And she'd rather have Krishna than no difficulty. We have no difficulty. Krishna is now leaving. Let's have some difficulty so Krishna will come. Because she's attached to Krishna. And so forth. Pure, expert, without cares. Free from all pains. Not striving for some result. Not striving for some result means for some material thing, for oneself. But a devotee is striving for something. They're striving for, let Krishna be pleased. Like a very nice example from Krishna's pastimes is to show the quality of his devotees. Krishna said, oh, I've got a headache. Oh, big headache. Krishna doesn't have a headache. But he was saying, oh, I've got a headache. And there's only one thing that can cure my headache. What's that? Dust from someone's feet. Put some dust from someone's feet on my head and then I'll be free from that headache. No one wanted to put their dust on Krishna's feet because they take the dust from their feet and put it on Krishna's head. They'll go to hell. They wouldn't find anyone who would give any dust. Then when they asked the gopis, quick, take the dust from our feet. Wait a minute, don't you understand? You'll go to hell. Don't worry about that. We're worried about Krishna's headache. Take the dust, put it on Krishna's head. Let his headache be gone. Not thinking of their material welfare, but thinking of the pleasure of Krishna. In whatever it is that one does, any undertaking of life, social, career, economic, family, friends, should we go here, should we go there? The pleasure of Krishna, if that's the focus. I travel because I'm a sannyasi, and I one of the things I have the fortunate experience of experiencing is what happens when flights get canceled or they're delayed. It just happened. People were bent out of shape, up in arms, ranting and raving and huffing and puffing and boo 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 boo, boo. That was just, you know, chanting and studying scripture. I was plenty engaged. But when there's a circumstance of life that suddenly changes, I've got a plan, I've got an attached, I wanted things to come out like this, and they're not coming out like this. We sat in the airport for 4.5 hours. Just a week ago, just, you know, waiting. Running up to the counter and harassing the people at the counter. What's going on? Air traffic control. I've heard those stories before. What's really going on? What's wrong with you guys? I've got an appointment and people are waiting for me. I got to bed at 2:00 in the morning. It was, you know, it turned my schedule upside down. But what to do? So if there's attachment to sat, then one can be detached from asat. That takes cultivation of knowing what is sat and feeling that happiness with that which is eternal. So, some conclusion here?